Thank you for joining us today for another sermon podcast from Flushing Community Church. We desire to experience the transforming love of God and share it with others. It's our hope that you will find today's recording encouraging for your personal journey of faith. Let's join Pastor Terry Bate as he shares another message from God's Word.
We are, as we've acknowledged, T-minus 3 days until Christmas. Anyone else feeling that pressure? Anyone? Anyone traveling this holiday season? Anybody hitting the road? You're traveling for the winter. That does not count. You cannot raise your hand. That is not what you're doing. You're just leaving us for 3 months. Anyone shopping like crazy? I shopped for 10 hours yesterday. That's why I slept in this morning. I'll be honest with you. So 3 weeks ago, we started this series, our Advent series called Dwelling, as we've been looking at how Jesus came to dwell among His creation. We've looked at how He had this plan in place all along. We've looked at the crazy characters that were part of Jesus' heritage and His story. Last week, we had this phenomenal children's musical that showed us how to be adopted into the family of God. It was so powerful, and it fit so well with what we were doing. This Tuesday at our Christmas Eve service, we're going to look at this humble arrival of Christ and the humble circumstances that surrounded His arrival. And then next Sunday is a special Sunday. We have one service at 11. There will not be a 9:30 service next Sunday. It's kind of a holiday weekend, so we're compressing this all into one service. But what we're going to be doing is worshiping, and we're going to be hearing stories about how God has been dwelling among us still. And so it's just awesome. Our staff is working together with getting several stories and testimonies. This will be a great, great Sunday together, but don't come at 9:30. Come at 11, and we'll have a wonderful time together. I want to encourage you, as we prepare now, to think about God's timing, to open up your bulletin or turn to the back of that bulletin. Get prepared to listen for God's voice today. I really believe He wants to share with us. He wants to speak into your situations, each of your situations. And each of your situations are unique. You've come here today with a different set of worries, a different set of fears, a different set of joys than anyone else seated near you today. And so I just pray that the Spirit would speak to you as you open your hearts. Throughout this series, if you've been with us, you know that we've started with this passage each week that comes from John's Gospel. The Word became flesh and made His home among us, made His dwelling among us. In other words, other passage and other translation could say moved into the neighborhood. And I love this image of God moving next door, establishing this close relationship with you and I, with all of humanity. But I've wondered, why then? I've wondered as I've thought about the Christmas story, why there? I've even questioned, why them? The circumstances and the timing of Christ's arrival to me is quite intriguing. Those in the ancient world certainly have a different understanding of what timing is than to us. For them, the time was all about the seasons. It was all about the sun and the moon and the stars, and they had a deeper appreciation of that. Obviously, technology did not allow them to work all through the night, or even travel through the night, or even travel great distances for that matter. Their pace of daily life would have been so much slower. Anybody signing up for that right now? A slower pace of life. I believe, because of all of these things, they would have had a deeper understanding of God's provision and protection in their life. We have stockpiles of food in our homes. We have more things than we could ever need in a lifetime. And yet for them, in this culture in which Christ came, they depended upon God for provision and protection every day, much more clearly than you and I. 1,000 years before the birth of Jesus, the shepherd David had been anointed to be the next king of Israel. The problem was he wasn't ready to be king. He was still a boy. Saul was still alive, and he was the first king of Israel. So while David was anointed, he was waiting to be appointed king. He had been anointed, he had been chosen, but he had not been appointed king yet. So he used this season of waiting to learn. He used the season of waiting to become a great warrior. And when Saul, the king, began to see David as a threat, he began to try to kill David. He saw him as a threat who needed to be eliminated. So David would often avoid Saul. He refused to kill him, and he waited on God's timing to place him in the throne, not his own will. A verse from a song of victory that David wrote, it's from Psalm 18, says, God's way is perfect. All the Lord's promises are proven true. Maybe that'd be an easier song to sing at the end of a victory than before. Anybody else with me? A lot easier to cheer for your team and be excited after a victory than it is during the struggle. David wrote also later in Psalm, wait patiently for the Lord. Wait patiently for the Lord. Be brave. Courageous. Yes, wait patiently for the Lord. Another song that's written in the Psalms from David, be still in the presence of the Lord and wait patiently for Him to act. David didn't write all the Psalms. In fact, Moses wrote Psalm 90, making it one of the oldest Psalms in the book. His perception of God's timing is found in verse 4 of that Psalm. For you, 1,000 years are a passing day, as brief as a few night hours. I guess I slept in by a few thousand years this morning. It appears to me that David, Moses, and the patriarchs just have had a better perception of God's timing than me. I mean, have you ever found yourself disappointed? Today? This morning? Have you ever felt like your expectations were not met? The timing of life just was not aligning itself to what you needed it to look like. Have you felt that way? I know some of you are waiting on some significant things. And you're like, where is God in this? Why is this so difficult? Why do I have to wait so long? Have you ever prayed for something and just felt like you were never heard? Or that God was letting you down? I know I have. For some, it could be parents who are fighting. For some of us, we're calling out on God because we're feeling alone and lost. For some of us, we feel the financial pressures mounting around us. For others of us, we have serious health concerns. For some of us, our hearts have been wounded. For some of us, our hearts have been broken. In those moments, I don't like to read what Isaiah wrote. Inspired by God, my thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says the Lord. My ways are far beyond anything you can imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. See, I connect more with Veruca. Anybody else connect with Veruca? I do. I want a pony. I want it now. I want the golden goose. Anyone else in that scene of Willy Wonka go, I get it, girl. Go get it. Right? Any other parents connect with the dad who's like, can I write the check? Can I write the check? Right? I connect with that kind of praying. But let me remind you that in our previous series on prayer, we discussed that the purpose of prayer isn't to get what you want. It's rather to align ourselves to the will and the purposes of God. See, we're not to just pray to God to get what we want and the timing that we want and how we're going to get it. We are to pray to God so that we align ourselves with His timing and align ourselves with His will. The exact opposite of what Veruca is all about. So maybe Isaiah is onto something. God's ways are far beyond anything than I can imagine. Maybe I focus more on the moments that things don't work according to my timing instead of seeing the miracles that are all around me. The miraculous moments, those moments when everything seems to align just perfectly and you can't ignore the truth. God's hand is in that moment. I want us to watch a brief video of a testimony of an incredible moment involving a few brothers and a moment that they were needed at just the right time. Let's watch this together. Anyone else watching this going, are you kidding me? Four brothers traveling to Ireland, another country, walk onto the beach at just the right time when a little girl is drifting away. No one else on that beach could have got her. And God sent a U.S. Coast Guard? Man, are you kidding? On the day, the anniversary of their great uncle's passing, which caused them to be great swimmers. I couldn't put any more dots together on this thing to say, there's a God, okay? That absolutely, I was searching for a video to make this. This was the first one I watched. I'm like, thank you, God. Done. All right? This one settled it for me. This was so cool. So when I think about the arrival of Christ and all of the moving parts that had to align themselves at just the right time, I'm reminded of the fact that the perfect timing of God doesn't always look like the perfect timing of Terry. And he was like, the timing of God is quite different than the timing of us. Did the timing feel right for Mary? I'm going to guess no. Did the timing of the census feel like a convenient trip for Joseph? I'm going to guess probably not. Could there have been a better time than during the Roman Empire to come? I don't know. Couldn't the timing have been better so that there had been a better relationship between the Jewish people and the Messiah? I don't know. The side story that often gets overlooked in the arrival of Jesus is actually found in his cousin, John. Yeah, the nativity stories are critical and they rightfully get a lot of attention. But to me, there's this amazing moment where prophecy is fulfilled in the fact that a forerunner came before the Messiah, one who would prepare the way and set up the arrival for God's chosen one. And John was that chosen vessel of God to do this. His message and his methodology were bizarre. They were way different, and it was so odd and so alarming that he got the people's attention and pointed them directly toward mercy, toward forgiveness, and toward salvation. And he powerfully set the stage for Jesus to appear and to create his ministry. In the Gospel of Mark, he quotes Malachi chapter 3 when he writes, "Look, I am sending my messenger ahead of you, and he will prepare your way. He is a voice shouting in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord's coming, clear the road for him." So this is the story of what John was called to do. But before John, there were his parents, Zechariah and Elizabeth, and their long and painful journey. We read about their story in Luke's account of Jesus' arrival. Both of them came from priestly lineage. In other words, they were both pastors' kids of families who had lots of pastors in them. We read that they're considered extremely faithful to the commandments, extremely faithful to the regulations of the law. They are the best people you would ever want to have over for dinner. But there is a problem. And the problem is this. They had no children. At that time, before John, they had no children. It's the worst thing that could ever happen to them. No heir to their family. No family name or heritage would be carried on through them. It's hard for us in 2019, almost 20, to recognize how hard this would have been for them, to understand what it meant to be childless in those days. Children were considered, in their day, a heritage from the Lord, a blessing from the Lord, and a woman who did not have children was considered to be defective or considered to be even cursed by God. It went so deep as to say that a husband could actually divorce a wife who gave him no children. The fact that Zechariah and Elizabeth were both very old, according to the story, means that they had resigned themselves to the unchangeable fact that they were childless in their culture. I don't want us to misunderstand the emotional significance of those words. Zechariah and Elizabeth were good people. In fact, they were great people. They served the Lord by their service in the community and by the way they lived their lives. Yet for some reason, they had been denied one of the most central blessings they could ever hope for. I imagine that they were confused. Perhaps they even wondered what they did wrong that led to God's displeasure in them. It's easy to believe that they felt somehow flawed or incomplete as they looked upon other families and friends who by now have had their own grandchildren and even great-grandchildren. Have you ever been there? I've done everything right. and it's not working. I've obeyed all the rules, and I keep getting overlooked. I'm waiting on God to provide a spouse, a child, a friend, a job, a ministry, freedom from addiction, or vindication against those who are picking on you or bullying you or spreading lies against you. And we all been there at some point in our lives where we say, I'm doing it all right. Why isn't this working out? And these are the moments when our faith gets pushed right to the edge. These are the moments when we need God to show up and He remains silent. And we ask, where are you, God? Where are you? Why haven't you shown up? In those moments when our faith is pushed to the edge, we can even ask, are you even real? Here's where we learn our first lesson from Zechariah and Elizabeth's journey. That is this: God's timing waits longer than we expect. It often takes us to the very edge. In fact, sometimes we've even given up on God by the time He shows up. It's in these moments that we have a decision to make, a decision that's based on faith, a decision that's based on hope, a decision that's based on trust. Will you trust God's plan, or will you manipulate others to create your plan? Will you trust in God's goodness, or will you determine what's best for you? Will you trust God's love, or will you search for happiness and satisfaction that this world can offer you? Stuff. People. Look at what takes place while Zechariah is doing his job in the temple. He's burning incense alone in the sanctuary of God, a task he might only get to do once or twice, maybe three times in his life. At the time that Zechariah is living, there are 20,000 priests working in the temple. They're broken into 24 different divisions, and so they only get to serve twice a year. I don't know how many were in his division, but there would have been a lot of priests. But this is the year. This is the moment when Zechariah is chosen to go into the Holy of Holies, the sanctuary of God, and burn incense by himself. It's the holiest thing he could do. Outside the room, there are people praying for him. They're interceding for him. And they're also asking God to bring the Messiah. They are praying that prayer every time the priest goes into the room to bring the Messiah. And while he's in the room on this appointed day, an angel appears to him. Luke chapter 1, verse 13. Don't be afraid, Zechariah. God has heard your prayer. Your wife Elizabeth will give you a son, and you are to name him John. You will have great joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for he will be great in the eyes of the Lord. This is our second lesson right here that we can see in their journey. God's timing takes into account our requests. The angel said, God has heard your prayer. I'm thinking, wait a minute, time out. Zechariah is an old man. The time has passed for him to have kids. Is he really still praying to have a child? According to what Gabriel, the angel in this moment, says, yes, God has heard your prayer. Could it be that Zechariah never gave up on God after all? When we find ourselves in what feels to be like hopeless situations, it's safer to stop praying, right? It's safer to lower our expectations when we feel hopeless. It's easier to just ignore that God could do anything. But Zechariah apparently understood that prayer was not a religious obligation, just to speak words into the air aimlessly. But rather, prayer is a relational activity, an activity that actually transforms our will toward the will of God. So when you don't feel like it, pray. Even when you doubt God can do it, pray. Because our prayers matter to God, because you matter to God. You ever want to hear from a good friend? You ever want to hear from your child or a loved one? You just want to hear their voice? That's how God views our prayers. It's a relational moment. See, if prayer is religious, We become more cynical as our prayers go unanswered. We get frustrated. I'm doing all the right things. It doesn't happen. We become frustrated. But if prayer is relational, then no matter what the outcome, we grow closer and closer to the one we're praying to because we're building relationship with Him through our prayer. Just because a situation seems impossible is never a reason to stop praying. Don't think that Zechariah here is perfect, by the way, okay? Just because he may have continued to pray and shown himself to be really cool, he asked God for a sign in this moment that this would really happen. And this ticked Gabriel off. I encourage you today, if you hear nothing else today, never tick off an angel. Doesn't work out for you. The angel Gabriel says, I'm Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God. In other words, how dare you question me? And in that moment, Gabriel took Zechariah's ability to speak until the child would be born. So during the entire pregnancy, Zechariah was left to ponder his foolishness for not believing. He would be left to listen to others and to still in that still small voice of God. It was a season of waiting for Zechariah. Time to think about the wonderful blessings that were coming his way and the responsibility that God had given him at this stage of his life to raise this boy. Waiting and learning on God's perfect timing. So when we go down to verse 57, we read, when it was time for Elizabeth's baby to be born, she gave birth to a son, and when her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had been very merciful to her, everyone rejoiced with her. We'll stop right there for a minute. When the baby was 8 days old, he was to be named and blessed in the temple, and so they went to do this. And Zechariah, through his muteness, confirmed that the baby's name was to be called John and not Zechariah. And the minute that the blessing came, Zechariah's voice returned. Now, Zechariah's role, remember, was a priest. It would have been his greatest joy to pronounce the blessing over his son, and he could not do it because of his doubts. But the minute the other priest stood in and pronounced the blessing and named the child, Zechariah's voice returned. God's timing is always perfect. When we read in verse 65, awe fell upon the whole neighborhood, and the news of what happened spread throughout the Judean hills. Our final lesson is seen in this scene. God's timing ensures that He alone gets the victory. See, others rejoiced when Elizabeth had the baby. There was a sense of awe and wonder that fell upon the entire region in which they lived. The people were sensing that God was at work. I imagine that within the people, there was a new sense of courage and hope. But remember this, that even in this moment when John enters the world, we have to wait 30 years before he identifies the Messiah. 30 years, 3 decades before their excitement and their hope become a reality again. How do we go through the waiting? How do we wait on God's timing in our lives? When life isn't working out, when we're feeling frustrated, when we're hurting, when we're scared, too often, I know me, I make it about my circumstances. When I'm in the waiting season, I'm thinking about my circumstances. I am focused on my injustices. It's all I think about. And the more I think about it, the more unjust it feels. You ever dwell on something and then just realize it's taking over your thought process? In those moments, I don't give God glory. I give Him a piece of my mind. Right? Anybody with me? Let's be honest. We don't give God glory when we're waiting and angry. We give Him a piece of our mind. We begin to doubt that He cares at all. It's in those moments that I don't worship God very well because I'm worshiping me. Right? Thinking about what I want, my circumstances, how it ought to be according to my ways. I'm worshiping me. So I create distance from myself and Him out of frustration. I create that. What do we need to do instead? 3 things. First of all, don't make this about me and my circumstances. Don't make this about you and your circumstances. Instead, see how God can use you in the midst of your waiting. See how God wants to train you, to equip you, to make you stronger. Don't make it about you. Secondly, give God glory in the waiting. Let others see that your faith is growing stronger and your trust is growing deeper. In the waiting is a moment for others to see you getting stronger. Finally, don't make it about you. Give God glory in the middle of the waiting and pray for God's glory in the answer. Pray that God gets the glory in the answer. I'm not asking you to give God glory when the answer is according to your way. I'm asking you to give God glory the answer in the answer, period. In the good, in the bad, no matter the outcome, to God be the glory. That's how we are to wait. Be less focused on ourselves and focus on what God is wanting to show me. Give God glory in the middle of your time of waiting, and when the answer comes, give God glory, even then. The Apostle Paul traveled to the known world to proclaim God's love through his son Jesus. He knew that people were facing obstacles and challenges in life, and so he reminds us of God's perfect timing in Galatians chapter 4. But when the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law. God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law so that he could adopt us as his very own children. And because we are his children, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, prompting us to call out, Abba, Father. In other words, Daddy. Right? This is a close relationship story. Now you are no longer slave, but God's own child. And since you are his child, God has made you an heir. Here's our takeaway for the day. Here's what I want us to see about God's timing. While it doesn't always feel like it, God's timing is truly better than ours. Sometimes, maybe all the time, it does not feel like it. But God's timing is always, always, always better than ours. Isaiah chapter 40 begins with this prophecy about John the Baptist preparing the way for the Messiah. And then it ends with what happens when we place our trust in God's perfect timing. You may know this verse. But those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. This is the model of what it's like for us to trust in the timing of God. So if you're waiting for God to do something in your life, and I know many of you here today are, then you're in great company. In the Old Testament, we read about how Abraham was promised an heir and waited a long time. We read about Joseph, who was waiting for his freedom. We read about Moses, who was waiting to become the leader that God called him to be. We read about Hannah, who was waiting to have a child. We already spoke about David, who was waiting to become king. I even think about the timing of Jesus, the woman who suffered from bleeding for years upon years upon years. I thought about the blind beggar who had been born this way and begged for years and years and years. I thought about the centurion whose daughter was dying and he went out to find this new rabbi and his daughter died while he waited. I thought about Mary and Martha who buried their brother. God's timing doesn't always feel right, but it's always better than ours. What can we learn from this season of waiting? There's no end to what God can prepare for us when we allow Him to lead us in the midst of our waiting, in the midst of this timing. Pointing back to the Christmas story, God used a virgin to bring His Son into the world. Crazy timing. God used the Roman Empire to have this young couple from Nazareth, which is a town of nothing good, to travel to Bethlehem. God used dirty and otherwise ignored shepherds to be the first worshipers of God. Crazy timing. God used pagan astrologers to announce His Son's birth in a crazy kind of timing. God used a faithful man named Simeon, one who was eagerly waiting for the Messiah to come, to be in the temple on the day of His blessing, on the day of Jesus' blessing, to pronounce He's here. God used the prophetess Anna, a widow for nearly 60 years. She was in the temple at that same moment telling everyone who had been waiting expectantly for God to rescue Israel, the time is here. God used tax collectors, accountants, and fishermen to launch the church. God used a murderer and persecutor of believers to spread the good news to all people. What are you waiting for God to do in your life? How can you draw closer to Him while you wait? And tell you what, only God can tell us what's in store for our good as we wait on Him to answer our cries, as we wait on Him to come to our aid, as we wait on Him to show His provision. Only God can prepare our hearts for how good this can be.
Additional downloads and resources are available by visiting flushingcommunity.org. Join us this Sunday as we gather to experience God's transforming love together.